How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
Welcome to Golf Talk Live, our 19th hole edition. I am joined once again by, I am Alan DePue, I should not throw that in there. I'm joined once again by my co-host, Christian Nazemus. And
how's it going, guys?
You guys did that again. And Andrew DePue.
We're just so excited to get together at the end of the week to talk about golf. So I can't hold it in. Anytime
we can sit down and pour a beverage and just shoot the, you know what, about golf. I mean, why not, right?
I love
a
it.
A beverage? I'm talking like three beverages at this point.
Well, I'm already two Jamesons in. And why Jamesons? Because we're going to Ireland next September with Prime Irish Golf Tours. And that's my shameless plug.
There you go. Now, we're talking traveling. We're talking going all over the place. The boys were down south. I'm thinking we're wanting to definitely probably start with the boys down south, right?
Well, the guys and the gals were both down south, but the men were a little further south. They were down at the Mayakoba Classic. You are correct, Andrew. And topping the leaderboard this week, his second PGA Tour win, Victor Hovland, minus 20. Little 6-under in the final round. Christian, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, first off, it was a great win. I mean, I watched 18 when he was coming down. And, you know, just what Aaron Wise did today first, just to charge up that leaderboard. And Victor also, it's kind of like them going back and forth with each other. So it was a great finish to watch it. You know, I love Victor. He holds himself great in the golf course and off the golf course. So happy. It's going to be one of many wins for him on tour, for sure. Absolutely.
He is a star in the make. I mean, I think he's already knocking on the door. He is.
Yep. I wouldn't even be surprised if he won a major next year, to be honest with you. I think he's that close to knocking through that door.
And we're going to get to Andrew in one second, but I just got to respond to that. I think there's a greater chance of that than your Ricky pick to win it.
Man, you stole my comment before I even got to say it. That was exactly where I was going with it.
Well, It's equally as good a chance, though.
Andrew, then hit him with the next one about TW.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. I'll say this. TW is definitely going to win a major. That's already statistically proven. We've talked about it on the show before. You know, Bubba Watson in his 10 the following year after winning, and then comes back and wins the next Masters. So I think TW is due for another Masters win. And Ricky's,
I was referencing his ability to say that PTW was going to miss the cut at Augusta, which we know
I thought he was.
Happen.
But what's that? Hey, I'll say another mic drop here for a second. I think Victor Hovland will win a major before Tiger does again.
Well, we've seen how your mic drop moments have worked for you in the past. So at this point,
hey, you know what?
I'm liking my chances.
I would love to see Tiger win another one, but I don't know.
We're going to, you know what? I'm going to go circle back around on Ricky in just a minute, because you're going to like this. But let's just run down the rest of the leaderboard. That's what we do in the 19th hole. We recap the weekend. We dissect it, give some interpretation as to how the weekend played out. We also look ahead to next week, which should be fun. But Aaron Wise, you already referenced that, Christian, finishes at 19 under. Adam Long, minus 17. Tom Hoge, minus 17. And Harris English sneaks up there for a top five at minus 16. Mayakoba, it's usually in December, the big name talents are starting to take the time off getting for the holiday break. We did have, obviously, JT, who made some serious noise on Saturday.
Big time moves.
Yeah, 63 on Saturday. So he rushed up the leaderboard. And then Brooks Koepka, DJ had committed and then backed out, said he needed a rest. And the last name, Andrew, on my list of stars that committed and played, at least for two rounds, Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you and Tony covered it on Saturday. I mean, Ricky was down there for clearly a reason. Hasn't been playing well this year. Now he's sitting on the official world golf rankings at, before this week. I think it was like 49th. I can't even imagine where he's at now. You know, realistically, it's a way different field than what we're used to, which is great. Gleets keeps us interested in the really crappy months of the year, which is never golf season. So for, especially for us Northerners. And, you know, for guys like us, that's who we want to see. Let's be realistic. Until somebody that's a journeyman makes a big splash, like, we really don't know who they are until that happens. So, you know, guys like Ricky, guys like JT, Brooks, you know, all the guys you mentioned, those are the guys we want to watch. And when they're at tournaments, whether they're playing well or not, there's more storylines to be told. So I really hope Ricky can turn it around. I also don't think we see a Masters without Ricky for that reason. I actually think you may see a situation where, and I'm just being very bold, I think Augusta National makes an exemption.
No, not going to happen.
No way. Not even going to happen.
I think so. I think so.
Not a chance.
Ricky, what, why would they give him an exemption? What has he done this year to earn the exemption or counter that? I'm a huge Ricky fan.
Your ringing endorsement at Augusta National.
I mean, I'm a huge Ricky fan, but I'm going to be legit here for a second. What has Ricky done in his career to earn an exemption at Augusta? Like, you're talking the best of the best in the world.
I mean, wasn't it 2 years ago that he was in the top five, and then the year before that, he finished second?
That was 1 year, though. Okay, but he's finished second at Augusta, which is great. By all means, it was a great tournament, but he hasn't done anything else really in any major since that top five finish besides, I mean, you know what I mean? He hasn't really played well. He
finished top five in all four majors.
All right, yeah, look, the only way Ricky's going to be at Augusta next year is two ways. One, he gets into the top 50 or wins in the first 3 months next year in 2021, or B, Augusta needs an official greeter coming off the 18th green.
I agree.
I don't think so.
I would like to see him there. He obviously is a name. I'm not busting on you, Ricky. I am, but I'm not. I mean, you're a hell of a talent, but I'd like to see him in Augusta next year. I mean, but I'd love to see him. He's got to play better.
I think realistically, you guys are quick to jump off the Ricky train. I mean, I know
I was Christian never on the Ricky train, Andrew.
Well, okay. Listen, hold on a second. Let me finish. So Christian obviously picked him. You know, I think that was definitely more of a dark horse pick. Let's be honest. You know, you mentioned it and it's true. He obviously doesn't have, you know, the year going that allowed him to be near a lot of top of the leaderboard type minds. But I think Ricky sells tickets. And I think Ricky sells sponsorships. I think Ricky he just brings a different level, just like all the other guys. I think it's one of those situations where I don't think you can go a Masters without a Ricky Fowler, for the sole reason that he has competed well in multiple majors there. He has competed well in multiple majors across the board. He finished top five every single tournament in a major in 1 year. I mean, that's definitely there. He's just not knocked on the door enough to get through it. I think he's got some work to do. Ricky, I would love to be able to say I have your talent and have your problems, because it would be a whole different world. But, I mean, that's why we're here, and that's why he's where he is, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ricky's done a lot for the game. But in today's golf world that we live in, two quick points. One, Ricky cannot be a Dustin Johnson right now. He cannot be a Justin Thomas right now with the way he's playing golf. Two, yes, he does sell tickets, but at the same token, if you have a stacked leaderboard with a Rory McIlroy, with a Justin Thomas, with a Dustin Johnson, or a Matthew Wolf, or even a Victor Hovland, they're still going to sell tremendously amounts of tickets at Augusta. I mean, just because Ricky's not at Augusta, it will be dreadful. And I love Ricky to death. Okay, he's one of my favorite players on tour, and he's done a lot for the game. But when you look at Augusta, you want the best players to be there. And unfortunately, Ricky is not one of the best players in the world right now. He's fell off significantly.
So my point, we'll get off the Ricky train, but my point is this. Augusta does what Augusta wants to do, and they don't need to sell tickets to have Ricky Fowler there to sell tickets. That's my final point. But I will say somebody else who actually I touched on in the Saturday show, thank you for referencing that, Andrew, And he did charge up the leaderboard and was right there. Tony Finau, minus 15, right out just outside the top five.
The weirdest looking putter, I might add.
Oh yeah,
I mean changed
his putting without question. Why'd you set that one up? That was like perfect for us. But Tony Finau minus 15, was that? I believe that was his first tournament back since COVID, right?
I'm not sure if it was his first one back. I know it was near his first one if it wasn't officially his first one. Yeah.
But bottom line, strong play by Tony. That was good to see. And the other one I was going to mention is our guy, because we love Kyle Peters. Our guy Corey Connors turned in. He was even day one minus five, minus three, minus five. I think for the four rounds. But another strong play by Corey Connors. Another guy. I'm not going to drop go so far as Mike drop, but that guy's knocking on the door.
He's a good enough ball striker. We've had Kyle on the show a number of times, and Kyle's even mentioned it, that the putting out there is such a difference maker because they're all great ball strikers,
right?
But that guy is a phenomenal striker of the golf ball. I mean, absolute clinic. I think he will be there. I think he's got to have some things go, nothing against Corey. I think some things have to kind of go his way. Like, he's got to get off to a hot start. When Corey gets off to a hot start, he seems to do a little bit better than having to force things, because I don't think that's in his nature. Right. But Corey, I think, is definitely due for a bigger tournament win. Not saying that obviously Valero wasn't obviously a big win, but, you know, I think he's due for maybe a WGC, maybe up at the top of the leaderboard for a Players Championship, one of those type of tournaments.
Christian, what say you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think there's numerous guys that are up there. I mean, you take somebody like a Matthew Wolf who can come through the door. Corey Connors come through the door. Sung J.M. I mean, Abraham Anser. You can go on and on and on. At least 30 to 40 guys that I could name off right now that are knocking on the door. And that's what the beauty of this game is right now. I mean, golf, I think right now is in a phenomenal spot. It's a phenomenal spot. You took words right out of my mouth. I think it's arguably one of the best situations and spots right now in golf history, personally, with all the talent that's on tour.
I think DJ is clearly still, he's a shoulder and head ahead of everybody, mm-hmm. but depth of talent out there is insane. And let me just throw some stats at you, and then we got to move on to the ladies. So here you go. You ready, Christian?
I love it.
Victor Hovland, 304 off the box all week. We know he hits it along, you know, he can put it out there. 64% of his fairways. And here's the statistic, 84.7% of his greens, 1.52 strokes gained on the greens. That's how you shoot 20 under.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. You know what I mean? I mean, Aaron Wise today after his round, as an example, came out and said that he felt like crap yesterday on the greens. And he was missing 4 or 5 footers everywhere. But then right after the round today, he comes over and he goes, you know, it's just that little extra practice that you have to put into to your game to make it better. And I mean, look what Aaron Wise shot today. Obviously, he came up just a stroke short. But still, if you're hitting 84% of your greens, like I've mentioned on the show, you're going to be making putts. And if you're hitting good putts, they're going to fall.
Agree. Andrew?
I mean, it's hard to disagree. I mean, let's be honest. I think everyone, if you told them like, hey, by the way, hit 84% of your greens, you're probably going to shoot what at worst, if you're a halfway decent golfer, a couple over par. I mean, it's hard for you to disagree with that. I think at the top levels, those guys, they practice so much that it really is almost, in my mind, it just didn't break their way that day. I mean, you'll see guys that come out, they'll miss putts that are just going to roll right over the edge that usually on a normal day, you know, fall in. And that's the difference. I mean, it's minor details that make and break people. And that's what the beauty of the game is.
Well, the ladies were also – let's move over to the ladies. Ladies were down south as also there at the Colony in Texas. They're actually going to be in Texas for the next 2 weeks because, as we touched on Saturday, hard to believe there's a women's open that's going to be taking place next week in December. in Texas. But this week, Angela Stanford, -7, followed by So Yi Ru, NB Park, Yelemi Noah, Jin Young Ko. Ko was -4. The other three were -5. And Angela Stanford got it done. I mean, her fourth round today, she 7 birdies, 2 bogeys. Ho-hum.
Wow. Yeah, it was a credible performance by her today. I mean, 67 in the last round was great by her. I mean, whenever you have somebody like NB Park, who is just like the face of the LPGA Tour, I mean, she's right up there every single week. And if you can hold off somebody like that by a couple strokes, I mean, it's just a confidence booster for her. Now, I don't know much about Angela, but you know what? I'm assuming she's ecstatic over the win today. I hope she celebrates, and I hope that she's up there again for the weeks to come. Absolutely.
Right. Andrew?
I mean, I think it was the final tune-up for the U.S. Open. It is weird, but, you know, what isn't weird in 2020 COVID world? So it's going to be interesting to see if any of that, you know, magic's, you know, spill over to the following week. Would love to see a unique U.S. Open in December, but reality is like exactly what Christian mentioned. When you hold off one of the big names, whether it's men's or women's tour, it's obviously a confidence booster. You hope that they obviously can continue to have success on tour, and I think she will. I don't, again, know too much about her game to really be diving in deep, but I mean, if you're winning on the LPGA, and which is the top professional ladies, you know, tour, then by all means, you must be doing something right. So, you know, congratulations to her.
I'm going
to
put you guys on. First of all, I'm going to put you guys on the spot. You both mentioned looking ahead to next week, just like we did at Augusta. I want to ask you guys for your prediction, but I'm going to go first since I'm hitting you on the spot, so you have a moment to think about this. My prediction next week, winning the U.S. Open. I actually got two, but one just keeps – Danielle Kang just keeps – she's played phenomenal all year long, and I say she gets it done next week.
I mean, you can't go wrong with that pick, obviously. I mean, she's up there every single week pretty much, it seems like. I mean, there's a handful of ladies that you can pick. One that kind of – she's been hovering around a little bit. One that pops out to me, Brittany Lang. I think she's going to be up there. Hopefully she gets it done. So,
Andrew,
I mean, again, too hard to pick against two of those players. I mean, I can't remember. I believe she is, but I don't know 100%. So I don't want to say it was Lexi's in the field next week, I believe. Right.
Absolutely. Which good statistic. Lexi Thompson is 25 years old, playing in her, ready for this, 14th.
Yeah.
U.S. Open.
Yeah.
That's incredible. 25.
Is that who you're going with?
I mean, at this point, she has enough experience, right? I mean, been competing since, what was that, 12? She was 12 years old in the 12. U.S. Opens. Yep. Yeah. I think she has definitely a shot. The thing that she's always got that impresses me, I mean, she hits the ball so freaking far.
Absolutely.
And it's never a bad thing. Again, I think it's all come down to short game. Does she have her short game? We'll see. But Danielle Kang is not a bad pick, and neither was Christian's pick either. So,
okay. So, like, just to finish out our review of the ladies, an interesting statistic over there with Angela today. She actually only hit 40 out of her 72 greens this week. And so, from a GIR perspective, not the best, but she obviously was getting it up and done. Or up and down from everywhere. And she was doing so because on average for the week, 25 putts.
That'll do it.
24 and 227s, I think, if memory serves me.
That is a hell of a statistic to have on the greens, if I may add.
If I could put one 25 putt round together, I think I'd be happy. So.
Well, you know what, Andrew? I think it's a perfect segue.
It is. I mean, and I got it. I got it over there just like I do every week. I've been practicing even today. In between this and live streaming for the first time on PGA 2K. So, you know, people, let's be honest, everyone wants to work on their putting. I definitely do. I always do. I'm trying to do better on the greens because I'm sick and tired of listening to people complain about my putting. So you need to go try out our friends over at Perfect Practice Putting Mats. They can be rolled up, used anywhere, anytime, no matter the weather. Fantastic product. You have to go check them out, especially with the holiday season. I know a couple people have already been messaging me about it. So don't, you know, wait too long because I know that they're busy. But go check them out. Use our code GTL15 at checkout for 15% off your purchase. They have ones that range, you know, their mini ones. They have ones that range to their XL version. They go all the way up to 15 feet. So it's truly the great gift for the golfer in your life. Or if you're looking to have, you know, gift ideas given to somebody that you are the golfer in the family, definitely something I would recommend. Again, I've had so many people reaching out to me about it. So definitely want to make sure that we get that out there and thank them again. But on a one step further, they're also our December product of the month. So that being said, starting, this is going to, obviously the show is going to go live here tomorrow on Monday. We're recording on Sunday nights as we usually do. So starting tomorrow, we will be posting our monthly giveaway. So make sure to stay tuned to that. It's going to be a special one since they were very, very kind to us this month. So our friends over at Perfect Practice, I can't speak highly enough about them. I mean, they're just phenomenal people.
So as we say here on the 19th hole, you never know who's going to join us. And the timing's impeccable, boys, because we're right on the heels of the PNC, father, child, and sitting in the chair, Brendan Elliott, the 2017 PGA of America National Player Development Specialist. And I got a whole ton of accolades we could talk about, my friend, but been on Golf Channel's Morning Drive. You formed an amazing little not-for-profit called the Little Linksters, which I really want you to expound on for the listening audience. And you are one of the foremost names when people talk about junior development. So welcome.
I appreciate it, guys. It's going to be a fun chat with you guys, I'm sure.
And we have, as we talked before going on air, you have a little connection. The boys are up there in New York. You're a New Yorker by originally. So,
got any stories? 23 years removed from upstate New York. So I don't envy you guys right now. Didn't you have a nor'easter come up through there?
I was going to say, there's some inches on the ground already for snow, and it's not
in Syracuse, surprisingly. Sorry. But I probably just jinxed it.
Sorry about that. Very sorry about that.
So Brendan, welcome. Let's talk about the tour, and we'll come back to some of the other really cool things that you're involved in. All of us are big into junior golf. My junior golfer is sitting on air with us now. I mean, that's how far back I go. You know, I think I browbeat him into set up, you know, get behind the ball, pick your target out. And the only thing is, and before you go, we got to talk about his putting.
Should have been worried about that from the start, just throwing that one out there, but whatever. What do I know?
I'll just throw you under the bus. The PNC Championship, Tiger and Charlie Woods. What's your thoughts on that? How cool is that?
You know, when that news came out, I immediately posted on social that that's a big deal. It's too bad, you know, everything we've gone through this year with COVID, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but it's too bad people can't get to see that up close and personal. But I think viewership numbers are going to be pretty good this week watching the two of them, because it's really the first peak other than some leaked footage, I think, that got out with a U.S. kids event that Charlie played in and Tiger was caddying. But other than that, this is our first look at what the next part of the Woods dynasty could be.
I'm glad that you said Woods dynasty, because I am all for the Woods dynasty. Yeah. We have the Christian. He's going to be maybe not as liked as a fellow New Yorker here in a second, because he told us on one show that he thought that Tiger wasn't making the cut at Augusta, of all people, Tiger. And you get to see a guy like, you know, Tiger Woods teaching his kid, which is just cool in its own right. But then the kid goes out, and I think the one you're talking about was where the kid shot -3, I think I saw, on nine holes.
Yeah.
I mean, the Woods dynasty is here. The Woods dynasty is going to stay. it could be, you know, still in theory playing, you know, maybe a couple events here and there for some of those majors. And I'm totally for it. So it's going to be exciting for sure.
Well,
Christian, you want to,
let me just reiterate here for really quick. I picked Tiger to miss the cut solely based off of his performance of 2020. I did not think Tiger, to this day, still minus Augusta, has not played well at all this season. I was just spitting truthful facts out. You can never bet against Tiger, obviously, but I was just looking at it from a statistical standpoint that he has not played well this season.
You never can bet against Tiger,
but I did
just because of the way he has played this season. He has not driven the ball well. He has not putted well this year. His short game has not been up to what it used to be. And that's the reason why I said he was going to miss the cut.
It's a fair point. It really is a fair point. But I tell you, there's that old saying, horses for courses. It could have been Phil. Well, actually, Phil played halfway decent. He had a good round or two in there. But you can't count any of those guys out, regardless of what type of season they're having when they walk on the grounds at Augusta National.
Yeah. I learned my lesson big time after that week. So I had some pretty bad picks that week, I may say. So
let's talk with your trained eye and the leaked footage. How good is this little kid? I mean, impressive, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel it is as a coach of young golfers, I feel it's less about when you're talking. What's Charlie? 11? I think he's 11.
He's nine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I feel like when you're talking about those ages from like 8 to 12 before they hit teenage, it's really about setting a good mindset in the kid within the kids and getting them immersed in the game and not really spending too much time on skill and technique and just beating them to death with hitting the range. You got to make it fun. And regardless of how good they are, you got to keep that fun factor. So I think Tiger, surprisingly, I'll admit it, I'm the biggest Tiger fan on the planet, but I didn't think that this relationship as Charlie grew would turn out to what we're kind of seeing, where he's letting him play and letting him be a kid and kind of stepping back and staying out of it. Because we know the stories we heard from Earl and Tiger, and granted, Tiger probably had a lot more skill at a younger age than Charlie did. Who knows? We're getting our first glimpses here. But from a technique standpoint, he looks super clean. I'm going to be really curious to see how his short game holds up, because that's usually a point where a lot of kids, you know, tee to green, they can be really good at young ages, but they leak a lot of oil around the green and on the green. So where I'm going to be looking to see how sharp he is around the green.
And how about JT's quote about Charlie busting, talking smack about his putting stroke?
That's classic. And Justin and his dad are playing, right?
I think they're actually playing with Charlie and Tiger.
I don't know if they're playing together, but I know that JT and his dad are playing. And I know that the other funny part about that comment, I don't know if you saw the full thing, that they were also bringing up the fact that Charlie, in theory, although he's trash talking him now, if you look at the age differences, Charlie could be playing, if he actually takes it to the next level, to the, you know, the PGA level, he could be playing in the Masters with a JT, and, you know, JT would be like 36 at the time. Again, the dynasty's setting up very well. I am so excited to hopefully continue to watch a Woods continue to dominate the golf world, because it's just there's something different when Tiger steps on the grounds at a golf tournament. Like,
let me jump in and with a little bit of, you know, reality. And Brendan, you and I are old enough to remember Gary Nicklaus.
Yeah,
I mean, there was the other heir apparent, and talk about a golf swing. He was textbook Jack, and, you know, he had some success. Certainly played on the mini tours and what have you, but, you know, are we heaping too much pressure on Charlie Woods right now?
I think
everyone, I should say.
I think it's fun to think out like that. But like I was saying, you know, it's all going to be kind of mitigated by how his dad, one of the greatest of all time, handles it. And so far, it looks like he's handling it well. You know, it's interesting you brought that up about Gary and Jack. One of the things we do at Little Linksters is our best Pee Wee swing contest. And Jack's been a judge of our contest for, well, I think four times now. And he was a judge this past year. And I hope I'm not leaking anything, but ESPN's doing a piece that's coming out in a week or two about one of the kids that won our under three age group. And they interviewed Annika. She's going to be on the piece. And Jack was a little concerned. I don't think he got involved in the piece, but he was a little concerned about putting pressure on kids too young because he kind of lived it with Gary.
Right.
And again, we're talking about a kid under three, and the whole premise of the story when it comes out on ESPN is going to be the love of the game and instilling that love of the game at young ages. But that is something you got to worry about. Like if you get a kid out there that's a world beater or does something fantastic at a super young age, you really got to worry about how that's going to affect the long term and keep everything in perspective. And I think, you know, we're having fun with this with Charlie, but it'll come to a point if his game continues to progress that we'll start to have those things come up in talk radio and on, you know, on ESPN and Golf Channel. If
we're around the 19th hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Brendan, I know obviously you're big with the junior golf. I was fortunate enough to be around, you know, the PGA Junior League and some of these other junior initiatives that are starting to spark up. I'd love to get your insight. You know, what's your thoughts? Because you mentioned already that you try to make it a fun. What's your thoughts on the PGA Junior League or these team style, you know, youth events that they're starting to put out there? Obviously, we know that golf is an individual sport as we get, you know, older. But, you know, we played on college teams together, you know, Christian, and obviously team atmosphere brings a lot out of people. But, yeah. You know, I think it's a great thing for the game. I think it's really helping to grow. So I'd love to get your insight on what your thoughts are on that.
I have a pretty, I think, maybe not, but I think pretty unique perspective on that. Huge fan of PGA Junior League. We've done it since the onset. And I talked to Bob Baldessari about this all the time because I was on the youth player development committee for the PGA when this first came out, and we were talking about it within that committee. And the whole idea behind PGA Junior League from the start was that term we hear all the time, growth of the game. And so that's from the onset when I started doing it, that was forefront in my mind that this is a growth initiative, getting kids into the game in a way that they're more used to with sports, with the team aspect versus the individual. So where I'm going with this, and I still am a huge fan, we do it year round down here in Florida. We've got 30 kids on our fall winter team right now, is the postseason gets a little bit too much for me. I think there's some folks out there that put too much of an emphasis on the competitive nature and building up super strong teams that can win every match. And to me, that's not what it's all about. I mean, if you should have, in my opinion, you should have a good mix of newbies, intermediate, and more experienced players. And I've found, at least what we try to stress with our more experienced older players, is be a mentor to those younger kids, because it's a double-edged sword here. What it's doing is it's helping the younger players develop quicker by having that mentor. But when you have an older kid who's a good player and give them that opportunity to work with a younger kid, it develops them even more as a golfer. And we've found that to be true. I've got two coaches that are teenagers on our team. One's a playing coach, and one's she's 17, so she's not within the age groups of PGA Junior League anymore, but they're coaches for me, and they've seen their games get better in that role as a coach, even though they're still a junior golfer, with helping other kids. So there's a lot of different ways you could look at this, but I know for me personally, growing up, high school golf, college golf, that helped me develop more than anything else that I did is a junior golfer. So I think the team aspect needs to be done more and more in the United States. Because we're seeing how overseas and some other places, it's really paying dividends with a lot of the team events, where we've had to do some catch up over the last couple of years with that.
You know what? I completely agree. When I was a PGA golf professional, I always said I better learned and understood the golf swing once I was actually trying to teach the golf swing, to communicate the components of the golf swing. Christian, you're a perfect example. You started in golf, went all the way up, played D1, recruited at Niagara. It is Niagara. It's a little chilly up there to playing golf, but what's your testimony on player development?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it starts, and I love junior golf. I mean, I've taught numerous clinics at numerous golf courses that I've worked at, and I think it's just absolutely great for the game. I think, getting them started at a younger age, and, you learn a lot. You know, I started when I was six, and I live on a golf course up here in upstate New York, and, it's just playing every day and, growing as a player. I mean, I mentioned this a few weeks ago. I shot 132 in my first ever tournament, and then 3 years later, I go back and shoot even par. So from that time where I shot 132 to the time I shot even par, it really showed, toughness, your ability to go out there and grind every day and do really well. And then also too, I learned a lot about myself in college. I mean, we didn't have the best of teams at Niagara. I mean, there was only a few of us that really kind of played well week in and week out. And all that pressure was kind of on our shoulder from our coach. And he wanted us to go out there and shoot, a couple over par every single tournament. And if we shot 76, 77, that was 4 or 5 over, he would be ticked at us. And it would be tough because, you have bad days in golf. Everybody does. If you don't, then please come talk to me because I would love to know your secrets. But that's the beauty of golf at the end of the day. I mean, it's something that you have to get started at a younger age. And I think that junior golf is going to spike in a tremendous upward direction, because I think that the more we do with junior golf, the more that just the golf is going to continue to explode in a really positive way.
Brendan, I know something you're obviously proud to say. You are the executive director of, and I would love for you to share with the listeners. Tell us about the Little Linksters Junior Golf Development. It's something I can personally and want to see continue to expand. It's a great program.
We started it, and I've told the story so many times over the years now. We started when my daughter, who's not a golfer now, she's 15 now, she's big into dance, and that's like her life. But when she was 4 years old, we were looking at different daycare centers because we had moved and we were looking for a new daycare center for her. And we visited a couple, and I was always big into what type of extracurricular activities they have. And I'm looking at all the flyers, and there's foreign language like Chinese, Japanese, Italian, there's computer keyboarding, there's music. And so I asked one of the directors at one of the daycares, I said, has anybody ever approached you with golf? And he's like, no, it's just, he thought it seemed too complex. So I turn and I'm looking at the sheet of paper that's got computer keyboarding and Japanese, and I'm like, well, how's it any more complex than this? I said, would you allow me to give it a shot? Because that was the school we had decided, the daycare we decided to enroll her in. And he said, sure. And, after he said, sure, I was like, oh, crap, I got to figure this out. But it's what people fail to realize, at least in my opinion, 12 years later since we first started it, is I think there's a misconception for even the best golf professionals that you don't have to teach the technique, and you don't have to be so focused on this, that, and the other when you're talking about 3, 4, and 5 year olds. It's more immersing them in the game, getting them to understand what the game of golf is, and making sure, I'm going to always say this, no matter if it's a +4 18 year old I work with or if 5 year old is just picking up the club for the first time, but it's got to be fun. There's no exceptions to that. And that's kind of where it grew. We did it at a couple different daycares. We do some after school programs. We have it at a couple golf courses now. And that program has spun into, well, we need to open the doors for other kids. So our grow program, which is our base program, turned into, let's have what we call our goals program, which stands for Golf Outreach Advances Life Skills. And that's for special needs kids, because it's interesting. I did a lot of research before we started this, but especially with kids with autism, there's just a deep connection with golf. That's just kind of mysterious that there, I don't know if you guys knew this, but the first diagnosed case of someone with autism, he's a gentleman in his 80s now. He plays golf every day, and he's done it his whole life all by himself. So there's always been this connection. Ernie Els has kind of exploited this a little bit more over the last couple of years.
Great example. Absolutely. Yeah.
So golf is just a great tool to enhance the lives of every kid, not just kids that live in a household that's going to be able to experience golf, but especially for the kids that won't have that opportunity. So that's what we want to do, is we want to expose as many kids to the game as possible.
So how would people find you if they want to be involved? Obviously you're based at this time still in Florida. Yeah. Obviously you're looking for other opportunities as they present themselves that makes sense, but how would people find you if they wanted to be involved?
Littleangsters.com, our website, is the best thing. And you know, we've talked over the years about expanding outside of Florida, and it's been difficult to try to figure out how we would do that, but you know, through COVID we've learned a lot about how we can do things and not have to go anyplace. So we're actually going to be rolling out some digital academies through a thing called Iconic Golf, where we're going to present our Little Linksters program digitally for the 3 to 8 year olds, 9 to 12s, and 13 ups, and then the special needs kids. So it'd be a monthly digital thing where folks anywhere can get it involved in what we do.
And have you seen in Florida what I'm seeing at the club that I run? And granted, the Northeast has been a little more shut down, a little more restricted during the COVID. But are you seeing the junior golf explosion that I'm seeing? Because the other team sports are not available.
Yeah.
So they're gravitating to golf. It's social distancing. And it's outside. It's healthy. I think it's another series of in steps. And Christian, you touched on it earlier. What were you saying about just overall about the tour?
Just like just earlier, we were mentioning about how young the game is right now, like on the PGA Tour. You know what I mean? I mean, you just had Victor Hovland win. You know, you have guys like Colin Morikawa, Matthew Wolf, DeChambeau. It's just like all these guys in their younger 20s. You can reiterate if you want to or add along to it, but I think golf is in a great place right now. And I think with Dustin Johnson on top of the world, I think with his ability to hit the golf ball, I think people want to beat him. And I think people want to try to, you know, mimic his ability to swing. And that you see that with Bryson hitting the ball 350 plus yards. You know, I think golf is in a great place. And I'd love to hear your opinion on it.
Yeah, I was like everybody when April and May hit and we really weren't sure of how everything was going to go. I was scared. I'll be honest. I didn't, you know, our school-based programs are kind of the core of what we do, and schools shut down right after spring break. So I was very, very excited to see right after things got a little bit better and where at least – where we could go out and do some more stuff. Our PGA junior camps in the summer were really good numbers. Our PGA junior league had good numbers. You look at the National Golf Foundation numbers for golf in general, not just junior golf, but it's rising. And I think to Christian's point too, I think what we've all known about the game forever, people that really had never given golf a second look, now because of COVID and they can't do the team sports, they're like, well, what's this all about? And they're seeing how the bug can bite you, as we all know. And then they're seeing what they see on TV with the young players, like Christian was saying. So I think anybody that's athletic that never gave golf a chance before can really go, wow, this could be something for me.
Brendan, one last question, because obviously we want to be conscientious of your time, and we obviously definitely appreciate you stopping by to the 19th hole. And if you're ever around, we would love to have you obviously back. You know, you mentioned obviously you try to keep things fun. You mentioned that, you know, the people that are the average golfer, the average person that really never played a consistent amount, is obviously starting to pick up the game. So on both levels, you know, what would you say is the way you would recommend teaching somebody? Is it hitting the ball 1,000 times and hitting it 1,000 miles, or is it making it fun by doing short game? Because my short game's terrible and they bust on me week in and week out about it. But we always, now we can really get into this. Well, we've had this conversation in the past. I think myself and Alan have on a couple of different occasions, and I'm in the belief, and I think he's in the same belief, that the way that the European teaching model from the green out is definitely almost the better model to some degree, because, you know, the reality is that's where the majority of your golf game is played. You know, you can hit an errant tee shot, but if you can get it up and down from anywhere, that's where it's, you know, you're obviously going to score better. So, you know, would love to see what your thoughts are on how you keep it fun and how you think that those average guys and girls are able to maybe do that here moving forward.
Hey, Brendan, before you answer it, I got to set the stage. The very first Pennsylvania U.S. kids, and I know you're a big U.S. kids instructor, one of the top 50 in the country. Andrew, I take Andrew to the Pennsylvania Championships, and he literally drove every green and lost by 5.
Andrew.
Well, listen, it's gotten at least a little bit better. I won't say it's a lot better, but it's gotten a little bit better over the years. So don't let him fool you.
So the bottom line is, I failed as an instructor. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Everybody wants to hit the long ball, and we get that. We understand that. I mean, when we watch golf, that's what's cool to us, you know? I mean, seeing Dustin Johnson or Bryson especially doing stuff that nobody's done off the tee box is crazy, and it's exciting. But to your question, Andrew, there's three areas that I find super important. You exactly hit the nail on the head. You got to teach from the whole back, and you've got to make people understand that most of the scoring happens from 100 yards and in, like 60%. By statistically, it's 60%. So you got to do that. We've already touched on the fun factor. In an area with the fun factor, at least for kids, and it's probably applicable to adults too, is this gamification, making games out of practice and using technology as part of that, where there's some tracking and testing, but doing it in a fun way, a game-based way. And then the third is, you've got to get them on the golf course as quickly as possible. And that's kind of contradictory to what's been traditional for golf professionals, where we maybe start them on the range or start them on the green, and then we'll eventually get you out onto the golf course. But that's where people want to be. That's with every other sport you play, the first place you touch is the place that you play that sport. And for golf, historically, that's hasn't been the case. So it's teaching from the hole backwards, some kind of gamification, making games and testing and benchmarking a fun part of it, and get them on the golf course as fast as possible.
All good stuff. Absolutely. Well, Brendan, my friend, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate it.
The beverage cart hasn't been around. I think we need to refill here at the 19th hole. And please, without questions, come back and see us again sometime.
Yeah, definitely will. I appreciate the invite, guys.
All right. Hey guys, how cool was it to have Brendan join us in the 19th hole? I mean, like I was telling you, his insight into the game, and most of all, Andrew, I mean, agreed. Teaching the game starts from 100 yards in.
Yeah, I mean, 100 yards in is clearly obviously very important. We joke up and bust on me all the time about 100 yards and in. So, you know, definitely it's an important factor. But the reality is, we don't know what 100 yards and in is, unless we have a fancy rangefinder. But the reality is, nobody likes paying high prices for a fancy rangefinder. Let's be honest. I didn't like doing it. I know a lot of people don't like doing it. It's why they don't have them. Well, we have been fortunate enough to partner with our good friends over at Penn Golf, who sell some of, if not the best, rangefinders on the market. Was able to see them myself. Phenomenal product. They're offering out to all of our GTL listeners from now until the end of the year, so beyond the Christmas holiday. I know everyone's busy with trying to figure out gifts and trying to get everything, so they extended it beyond the Christmas holiday to the end of the year. If you use our code 19, So just 1-9 whole, you will receive $35 off plus free shipping. That's important because obviously the shipping always kills us. So again, use our code 19HOLE for $35 off plus free shipping from now until the end of the year. They have their new Blackjack rangefinder. They come out with one and it's a phenomenal product. So definitely need to try it. Easy as can be to use. And thank you again to Penn Golf for letting us be able to work with them throughout this holiday season. So I know that that was a little shameless plug, but had to throw that in there because I thought it was no time better.
It seemed pretty appropriate. So guys, we are coming down the back now, final holes of the back nine. And I just have one last thing to say as we're teeing off here on 18. Did you guys see that the latest edition of golf.com's top 100 came out? And open for some interesting debate, interested in hearing your thoughts. 17 brand new golf courses cracking the top 100 for the first time. That's a record. But even the top 10 shuffled up, and I'm just going to rattle. Let me rattle them off just so then we can just jump into the debate. Number one, Pine Valley. Number two, Cypress Point. Number three, Shinnecock Hills. Number four, National Golf Links. Number five, Oakmont. Number six, Augusta National. Number seven, Sand Hills. Number eight, Marion. Number nine, Fisher's Island. Number 10, Pebble. And I actually want to touch on number 11, dropping to number 11, Pinehurst number two. Christian, what say you?
I mean, there's some courses on there that, you know, people may say yes to being in the top 10, may be saying no. I mean, Augusta's number six, you know, but at the same token, as I was talking about earlier with a buddy of mine, you know, is Augusta really challenging for the players, you know? So and that may be too high, that may be too low, but, you know, but
Augusta was number, it was always Pine Valley, Pebble and Augusta top three, for years and years and years that these rankings came out. Now they're down to six.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. Like if you look at the last couple of Masters tournaments, you know, minus 20 DJ, you know, you've gotten up to minus 13 with Jordan Spieth a few years back. You were at Tiger Woods at minus 13. I don't know. I don't know if it really necessarily, if you're a veteran there, I don't know if it necessarily challenges you as opposed to a place like an Oakmont or a Pine Valley or, you know, even a Pinehurst, for example. So I mean, I'd love to play all courses. Keep in mind, I'd love to, you know, travel around the country and play all of these. That'd be a great thing to do, but yeah, I'll make my way around there eventually.
I mean, now that we get to see what they came out with, and it wouldn't be a COVID 2020 world without Augusta National somehow not being in the top three in my mind. Okay. let's just stay that number one. Number two, I now have my bucket list of goals to hit on the top 100 courses. I know they change, but they're all predominantly normally up there. So have my bucket list of courses now that I can start checking off. Thankfully was able to go to number two, played at number four, Cradle, you know, the Pinehurst Resort. I think my take on it is actually a little bit different on Augusta National. I don't think it's because obviously, and I didn't read the full article, so maybe it did, but I don't know how they judge what determines one course better than another. Is it the playing difficulty? Is it just the overall allure of the course? What is it? So if there was, I do apologize. I'm going to seem a little off, but my thing is, I actually think that Augusta National is falling, and it's not because Augusta National is any worse of a course. I think Augusta National is falling because look at some of these other courses. Now, Pine Valley is obviously still Pine Valley, but like the Pebble, the courses that people can still to some degree get out and play are now being ranked higher because they actually have the playing ability. Like nobody is really getting on Augusta unless you're a member at Augusta or you're a tour guy. So the one that really though, and to kind of round out, and I'll let you then obviously, you know, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
Yeah. my last take is, and I'm sure you guys maybe even feel the same, whoever did this ranking, they clearly had a golf course type in mind. Because
oh, man, you stole it.
Oh, well, there you go. the golf course type in mind is like this sanded valley and runoff, and it that's not Augusta.
Right.
So I almost think that these rankings, while they are phenomenal, we love seeing them. We want to know where the top courses are so that we can go and try to play them as golfers ourselves. I don't take too much stock in it other than just knowing where they roughly are, because the reality is every course is a different opinion. Like we went to number two. That was ranked higher than number four at the time and still is. And in the reality.
And forever will be, because it's Ross's masterpiece. But you touched on it. You picked up on the same thing I'm saying, which is I noticed a trend this year in the rankings that the clubs that had were naturalistic in design, we'll say, with lots of waste areas, lots of natural bunkering, lots of ornamental grasses framing the holes. Those clubs seem to elevate in this standard. And I'll give you the perfect example. The newest one that's on that top 10 list, Sand Hills, which, by the way, is an amazing venue. It was built in 1995, but Crenshaw and Core barely even moved any dirt when they built that thing. They took a naturalist approach. A good friend of mine, Lester George, down at Ballyhack, down in Southwest Virginia, he took a naturalist approach when he built that. And it as well has a lot of the natural tendencies of the land. So I agree with you, Andrew. It seemed as if they identified, or the selection committee, which was a large one, I think it's 47 different people. And these are noted noted architects, noted people in the golf industry, but they seemed to like a certain look.
Now, let me ask you, because again, I didn't go the full way down the list. Did number four make the list?
Yeah, it was down at
it's down ways, I think.
Like the last 25, I believe.
Yeah. And again, this is where I go back to my point of like, there's like the opinion factor to a degree. Like, obviously, the top courses are the top courses. Like, we've all seen the difference between a local municipal course and Pinehurst number two or those type of places. But the reality is, and again, we've experienced it both, you and I. Number four, in my mind, number two obviously has the history, right? Like, number two is forever going to be a top-end course because number two has the history. Me personally, from a view, from an overall course and just how, in my mind, it played, I don't see much of a difference between four and two. I almost think four is better. Amazing, like, yeah, he did a phenomenal job.
Amazing job on number four.
And so it goes into the question of like, how much stock do you put into someone's opinion? And now obviously there's more than one person's opinion, but like, how much stock do you put into that opinion? Because everybody's different. Like, I could go to one course and think it's absolutely not my cup of tea. Christian can go to that same course and absolutely love it. You could go to the same course and think, it's okay. It's not great. It's not bad. And then we could go to a completely, and that's the beauty of the game, is like, we could go to 30 different golf courses and all probably have a different opinion of where those 30 rank. It's just, it was funny to me, the courses that made that list were, like you said, and like I said, they all had a similar feature, very natural, you know, approach. Maybe it's because of a weird year where they went with, let's be more natural and I don't know.
I can tell you from a golf operator standpoint, the naturalistic approach is the trend. Christian, any final thoughts on it though? With the top one.
First off, Pinehurst number four is ranked 92nd out of 100.
Yeah, come on.
That's crazy. No, I mean, just hope everybody has a great week. For my final thought, I know it's tough times right now with COVID. Make sure you tell somebody that you love them at the end of the day. And my beverage is getting a little empty here. So,
Andrew, final thoughts this week?
My final thoughts is 92 for number four is an absolute devastation. It should be much, much higher than that. But I do agree. I'm about half empty, so needing a refill. And it's a weird time. The holiday season is obviously a time to be thankful. So always be thankful for what we got, regardless of what that may be. And, you know, I'm just glad that we get to continue to do what we loved, which is sitting here around the 19th hole and having a beverage and talking golf. And I'm looking forward for it to continue. Obviously, we've got a lot of cool things coming out now with these graphics and live streaming and stuff. So we're going to be taking this to a whole nother level in 2021. And I'm hoping any friends and family that you want to share with, you know, for our listening audience out there, we greatly appreciate it because it's going to be one heck of a ride.
And I echo that, folks. We can be found on all social media channels. We are on Facebook at Golf Talk Live, Twitter at TL Golf Talk Live. We are on Instagram, and I bring that one up in particular because, as Andrew mentioned earlier in the show, we are running an Instagram special for the Perfect Practice Putting Mat, our December product of the month. If you want a fun way to learn how to improve your putting stroke, as Andrew is learning, you should register and tell your friends to get in. Try to win this. It'd be a great Christmas present for everybody. I will say one final comment simply to say I have played the number one golf course in the world, and it is that tough. So, Christian, hit them long, hit them straight, feet short and crooked.
Always.
Till next week, folks.